Welcome to the Transatlanticist Politics Podcast at the America Centrum in Hamburg. As always, I'm your host, Andrew Sola. Just a note to the listeners, we are recording this episode on the 13th of September, and the federal elections in Germany are on September 26th. As you know, 2 weeks can be an eternity in politics, so a lot could happen in the next 2 weeks, but we'll discuss where we're at today. So the German people will be going to the polls to decide the new federal government in Berlin. However, they will also be deciding on a new chancellor to replace Angela Merkel. It still seems hard to imagine that Chancellor Merkel will be retiring after 16 years in office. During this time, she established herself as the calm and reasonable face of German politics. She also became the most influential political leader in the EU and the most powerful woman in the world. Whoever the new chancellor is, he or she will have big shoes to fill. So who are those other candidates, and what are the most important issues influencing German voters? We're going to spend the next hour answering those questions, and I'm fortunate to have a fantastic expert to fill in all the details. Christina Neuhaus. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Christina Neuhaus has been reporting from the halls of power in both Germany and the United States for the last 20 years. In the U.S., she worked for Deutsche Welle Radio in Washington, D.C., as well as Oregon Public Radio. Upon returning to Berlin, she became politics editor for Die Welt and then the political correspondent for the DAPD. More recently, she has held a number of positions with Agence France-Presse, including foreign affairs editor and economics correspondent. Since 2018, Ms. Neuhaus has covered the German federal government for the AFP. She has a big portfolio that includes the finance ministry, the foreign ministry, and the education ministry. In addition to that, she covers two major political parties, the SPD and the FDP. So we've got a terrific expert who's going to explain a lot of the nuance for all of you listeners out there. So we're going to start today just with an overview of the voting system in Germany, and then we'll talk a little bit about the parties and the so-called chancellor candidates. So let's just start here, Christina, with the voting system, and maybe you can also talk about election mechanics and specifically how the coronavirus is influencing voting.
Sure. So on September 26th, everyone here who goes to the polls will have two votes. There is one vote that's a party vote. So that is more or less the most important one because it mainly decides who gets how many seats in parliament. But there's another vote where you vote for one candidate. In every voting district, the parties put up direct candidates, as they're called, and you can vote for one of them. So whoever gets the most votes gets a seat in parliament for sure. So it doesn't matter how big your margin is, right? It's a winner takes all. So if you're just a little bit ahead, that's enough, and you have a guaranteed seat in parliament. And then the rest of the seats are basically allocated according to this other vote where you vote for a party. And you can't vote for a chancellor directly. That's interesting, I think, for people in a lot of countries where the system is different. So you can't actually say, I want this person to be chancellor, but you have to vote in a way that maybe you vote for the party directly that has the best candidate in your view, or you vote in a way that you think, I want this coalition to happen, and then this person will be in charge, but you can't vote for the actual person who will be in charge themselves.
Yeah, you just mentioned the coalition. Can you explain a little bit about how coalition governments are formed And of course, it starts with the fact that none of the parties ever reaches 50% plus one of the votes, correct?
Yes. So the last time that happened is decades ago, that there was a party that had more than 50% of the vote. So that doesn't happen anymore.
Was that the CDU back then?
Yes. So you need to form a coalition. You need a partner. And this election is different in the way that it will very probably be three parties in the end that form a coalition. So far, it's only ever been two. So at the moment, for example, it's the CDU, the Conservative Party, and the SPD, the Social Democratic Party. And it's always been two parties for the last few decades, but now two isn't even going to be enough, right? Because the political landscape has changed so much and it's so split up that it's very probably going to be three parties in the end. And this is a topic in the campaign as well. People know which parties are likely to go together and which are not, but there are a lot of options right now because three partners is a lot. There are a lot of combinations possible at the moment.
And that's an interesting feature, I think, of German politics. Maybe the Dutch are similar in this respect. Since no party can ever win an absolute majority, there's a lot of centrist negotiating going on because you can't really be too much of an extreme, because then you would never be able to form a coalition because no one would ever join it with you. So there's, I think, this gravitational pull towards the center of German politics. What do you think?
Yeah, and people also have to be careful about what they say during the campaign, as in terms of, I would never do this. You know, like if I become chancellor, I would never do this, or I would most definitely do this, because what if during the negotiations with the potential partners, you just can't get that agreed, right? So it influences the campaign in that way too, that you have to be a little open about things, because you know that after the election, some of the people that you're now attacking will have to be your partners.
Right. And since we've been talking a lot about the different parties and mentioning them already, let's just quickly run through, I think we'll do six. There are more than six parties, but we'll run through the top six.
Six are in parliament right now, so that makes it.
Six are in parliament right now. And this will be the CDU, and the chancellor candidate is a man by the name of Laschet. Then we have the SPD, or the SPD, and the chancellor candidate is Scholz. And these are two of the traditional biggest parties in Germany. So these are very bad comparisons, but just for the American audience, you can compare in some respects the CDU to a traditional center-right party like the Republicans when they were normal. And the SPD is something like a center-left party like the Democrats when they are normal. And then, of course, the third party, which has been growing a lot recently, is the Greens. So those are the top three. And we'll start with those three. Sure. And just so you know, the polling today shows the SPD, so the center-left party, at 25%, the CDU at 21%, and the Greens at 16%. And that's from Politico. So let's start with Laschet and the CDU.
Yeah, so the CDU obviously has been in power for a long time now because, as you mentioned earlier, Merkel has been the chancellor for 16 years. Laschet is currently the leader of the Bundesland in Germany that has the most people. That's North Rhine-Westphalia, so in the West. Yeah, he's also head of his party. In the beginning of the campaign, in the early days of the campaign, the CDU polled very, very well. They were far ahead in number one. But there was a fight in the party about who should be the chancellor candidate, and that started to bring them down, I think. And then Laschet has had some, well, let's say some PR problems. He had some blunders. There were several things that he just didn't do very well.
I'm remembering after the floods, that maybe our listeners remember the terrible floods in the west of Germany. at a serious memorial or press conference, there was footage of Mr. Laschet joking around with some other politicians and dignitaries in the background.
Yeah.
In a village that had been totally destroyed and where many people died, and that did not go over well with the German public.
Yeah, that was a big one. That was a serious blunder. He was talking during a press conference of the German president. So the German president is in the foreground talking about how terrible this catastrophe is. That affected Laschet's Bundesland, right? And he's standing in the background, like you just said, and he's just laughing as if something is the most hilarious thing in the world. And yeah, that did not go over well with people. So his public appearance has raised a lot of questions, more so than the actual issues, I think. So at the moment, he is behind. He's in number two in the polls. And if you ask for who would you like to have as chancellor directly, that's a very common poll question, even though people can't vote for the chancellor directly. He's always last at the moment. So it's always Scholz with a big margin ahead. And then it's Baerbock, the Green chancellor candidate. She's in second place. And then somewhere far down the line is him. So he's now fighting an uphill battle because, yeah, obviously he wants to win as well.
And unfortunately, his blunders haven't helped him.
Yeah.
So I've been traveling around Germany the past couple of weeks, I've been taking note of my favorite election posters.
Oh, yeah.
And the one for the CDU that I chose was as follows. I'll read it in German and then translate. It's mit Sicherheit für bezahlbares Wohnen und für ein gutes Leben im Alter. So that means, so a Germany with security, so a secure Germany, and security as a, and here I don't think it means security against terrorism. I think it means just life security.
Yeah, I agree.
And then for bezahlbares Wohnen is for a livable, payable life, so things aren't too expensive, such as apartments, food, and train tickets. And lastly, for ein gutes Leben im Alter, is for the retirees,
right,
in Germany are a huge and powerful voting,
yes,
bloc, of course. So everyone panders to the retirees.
Yeah, for sure.
But also the amount of money retirees are getting paid in the equivalent of German Social Security has become a pretty big topic.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I chose this one, Christina, is because those three themes are the same themes that everyone else has. All the parties have a similar form of,
sure,
that poster.
Yeah.
Everyone's for security. Everyone's for a livable, payable existence. And everyone is for helping out retirees.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be?
And I just, yeah, as you would. It's not, but what's interesting about the CDU, and I think Merkel has influenced this a great deal, she's been able to guide the political debate, and she's really made the CDU a party of pretty centrist issues.
For sure.
And you can't really be to the left or right of them.
Yeah, no, it's true. And yeah, this is the big topic, I think, in the CDU campaign, is like, we are in the middle and we don't want to change the country too much, right? They try to make sure that nobody gets hurt too much in a way. And so I bike by one of those really big billboards every day from the CDU, and it says, damit Deutschland stark bleibt. So that just means keeping Germany strong, and everybody can just interpret that the way they want, right? Who could ever argue with a slogan like that? So they're pretty in the middle. If you look at their program for the election, it's not very detailed. A lot of things are painted with a pretty broad brush, and they just want to give people the feeling that not too much is going to change for them. And mm-hmm. I agree with you. That has a lot to do with Merkel, because they also want to keep this Merkel legacy as a plus for them, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't choose that same election poster from four years ago, which was a picture of Merkel, and it said, in safe hands.
Yeah.
That's all. and Zeeshra Handan in safe hands. And that was, I thought, pretty effective.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Nothing else. Just, we've got Merkel, you're in safe hands, vote for
us. You see, they try that because on the one that I just mentioned on this billboard that says keeping Germany strong, it's a very big photo of Laschet's head. So they just try to put Laschet in there instead of Merkel and hope it works.
Speaking of big heads, that's mean. Let's move on to the SPD and Herr Scholz, who is their chancellor candidate, who is currently the finance minister, and he was the first minister for Hamburg, where the Amerikazentrum is located some years ago. So what does the SPD stand for, and how is Scholz doing?
Well, so they're the Social Democrats, so social issues are a big thing for them. Their big, like, slogan, their main word for the whole campaign is respect. So they want to give out the message that they respect everybody. Like, if you are working a not well-paying job, for example, they want to raise the minimum wage. If you're an old person, obviously, they want to make sure your pension is secure. So respect is what they're communicating a lot. And yeah, they're talking about, like I said, the minimum wage, affordable housing, just classic social democratic topics a lot. And their campaign is very, very, very much centered around Scholz. Like, he is on the big billboards. It's just him. And then it says Chancellor for example, affordable housing, right? Things like that. So he has held public office for a really long time. As you mentioned, he's now finance minister. He was in the federal government before. He was the minister of labor. He governed Hamburg for a long time. So he has been in charge of things in different places for a long time. And that's what the SPD wants to capitalize on. They want to say, hey, this guy has experience. He has been at this for a long time. He's been doing well. We can maybe talk about the stuff that's not going so well for him in a minute. And that's what they want to communicate to people, that this guy can handle it because he's been doing it and he knows how things go.
In many ways, they are advertising him as the natural successor to Merkel.
Yes, they are.
Even though he's of a different party, but they're taking Merkel's good qualities and transposing them upon Scholz.
And I think that's actually a smart strategy, because the other two, so Laschet, he's the minister in the Bundesland North Rhine-Westphalia, right? But he hasn't held office on a federal level. And Annalena Baerbock, the chancellor candidate of the Green Party, she hasn't held any public office so far. She's head of her party, but she hasn't held any public office so far. And so I think it's a smart move by the SPD to present Scholz as, this is the guy who knows how it works. And the other two don't maybe really know what they're up to or what they're getting into.
Yeah, and Laschet, as you said, is and for American listeners, he's the equivalent of a governor of a state.
Yes, right.
He would be like the governor of Texas or California, so a big, powerful, wealthy, industrious state. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting from what you just said from an American perspective is usually when the U.S. has governors who become presidential candidates, they always say, oh, this is a positive because I'm not tainted by corruption in D.C.
Right.
And I haven't heard anything about, no one is like uses that kind of argument that a governor or a minister of Bundesland somehow is better because he's not tainted by the Bonzen in Berlin, by the lobbyists and others.
No, you're right. That doesn't really come up. I think that has to do with the fact that the federal government is held in at least slightly higher esteem here than in the US. I mean, the system is also very different, right? Because states in America have much more independence within the country than the Bundesländer here do, even though we are a federal system as well. But it's different. And yeah, this image of, oh, in the capital, everybody is just corrupt and I don't know, it's a swamp, things like that, that doesn't really come up here. What the candidate from the Green Party is doing is she is trying to position herself as a new force for change, right? Because both the SPD and the CDU have now been in government together for 8 years. And before that, the CDU was in government with somebody else. And before that, the SPD was in government with somebody else again. And so they're like, yeah, we want something fresh, something new. You have had 8 years and you didn't do the stuff that needed to be done, for example, on climate change. And now someone new has to come in and actually start doing stuff. So in that way, she is positioning herself as a new force, but not in this, with this swampy rhetoric.
Interesting. Final point on Scholz before we do discuss the Greens a little bit more. So the poster that I selected for Scholz was what you already mentioned. His poster just says, respect for you.
Right.
Respect for Dish. Yeah. Which from a marketing point of view is pretty interesting. And apparently it might be very effective, as you said. So we have that respect for Dish as this common theme. But Scholz himself is having some trouble now.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the potential political scandals that have plagued him?
Sure. So the most recent one is actually something that happened this past week. So just a few weeks ago, prosecutors from one of the Bundesländer, from one of the states, came into his ministry to do a raid. And in one way, it's pretty spectacular because that doesn't happen very often, right? A raid in a federal ministry.
And before an election.
Right before an election. Yeah, there have been some questions about that. You know, was it in some way politically motivated? I don't know. It's hard to tell. I kind of doubt it because I don't really think prosecutors work that way, but who can tell? Anyway, so what they were doing, so there is a unit that is called the Financial Intelligence Unit, or FIU, that is working against money laundering. They're fighting money laundering, and they're not within the ministry, but the ministry sort of has directorial oversight over this unit, right? And this unit hasn't been doing great work. I think everyone pretty much agrees on that. They have just been not doing enough to fight money laundering, which is actually a big problem over here. So prosecutors have been working on this case, I think, for about a year to figure out, like, did people sort of criminally neglect their work in this FIU? And now they came to the finance ministry to see if they could find any additional information that could help them move the case along. And so now Scholz has to face the question, like, did you not do your oversight job well enough? Should you have been tougher on this unit that was obviously not doing a great job? And he has been saying, like, well, I already did stuff. Like, I put more people into the unit. I gave them new IT. I changed the leadership, stuff like that. And that's all true. He did. But still, he's facing that question. And this debate also brings up two other things that are a little bit older, but also connected to him and that are big problems. So I think most people have heard of the Wirecard scandal. So Wirecard was this finance service that collapsed, and then all of a sudden more than 2 billion euros were gone and nobody knew where they ended up. It's like the biggest
Oops.
Scam that any company pulled off, I think, probably in the history of this country. I don't know. So the Wirecard case showed that the financial regulator just doesn't do a very good, or didn't do a very good job, didn't have enough power to really look into stuff like that, things like that. And this is another regulatory body that is like under Scholz's oversight, right? So this is another thing where he had to answer the question, did you not see that that wasn't working, that they weren't doing a good enough job? Why did you only see that after Wirecard blew up? Things like that. So that is coming.
So he was in charge of the the regulatory agency at the time?
No, but it's like a subsidiary from the finance ministry, basically.
Right? Okay.
And then there's a third thing that people might have heard about as well. It's this tax cheating the government out of taxes on a very big scale. It's called Cum-Ex. It's a very complicated scheme. It has to do with dividends that companies pay, and then people pay taxes on that, but they can get the taxes refunded. And then several people said, yeah, I paid this tax, please refund me, even though only one of them actually paid it. It's a really complicated thing, but people somehow came up with that and were very successful. This is another thing where billions of euros did not make it into the state pockets where they should have been, right? So this actually has to do with Scholz in his time that he was in Hamburg, and he had somehow close ties to one of the banks that were involved in this scheme, and then the bank was supposed to pay those taxes back that they cheated the state out of, but Scholz failed to get the money back in time, right? Because at some point it's too late. And so this is another thing that is coming back now to haunt him. This was years ago. But still, people are wondering, is this guy responsible or behaving responsibly or tough enough on financial crimes?
So it is affecting him negatively.
Yes, it is.
We can see that in the polls.
Yeah, I mean, he is still ahead in the polls for sure. But he is someone who is very controlled, very, very good on message. He doesn't really misspeak very often. He doesn't have those blunders like the laughing video that we just talked about for Laschet. He's a very, very professional, a lot of people say boring politician. Mm-hmm. And this whole complex is the one thing that is standing against him, or that his critics are using to attack him, because on all the other issues it's very difficult to find an angle where you can attack him or criticize him.
Okay, let's move on then to the Greens and Baerbock. And you've already made a really important point, which is that Baerbock is positioning herself as a real candidate for change. We call them change candidates. So tell us a little bit more about the Greens and Baerbock, please.
So it's interesting. At the moment, the Greens are the smallest party in the parliament. But actually, some months ago, they were briefly number one in the polls. So they've gotten a big boost from, I think, especially all the stuff that has recently come out about climate change. Like I said, these floods that we had in Western Germany in July did bring this topic more to the center of the campaign. There was the new IPCC report that said, oh my God, it's all even worse than we thought. We have to act now, things like that. So Baerbock is different from the other two candidates in several ways. First of all, she's a woman, so the other two are men. She's much younger. She's 40. Laschet is 60 and Scholz is 63. And she is an outsider insofar as she hasn't held public office yet. And the Greens have been in federal government in as part of a coalition with the SPD, but they have never led the federal government. So their big topic, like you said, is climate change and saving the environment and things like that. They also have a big social component, like fighting against poverty. They also want to raise the minimum wage to 12 euros and things like that. And yeah, for a while it looked like maybe they had a chance to actually get into the chancellery. But Baerbock had a few blunders along the way as well. There were things in her CV that weren't quite right. She has a book where she apparently plagiarized things, or I don't know if that's too strong a word, but she copied.
Uh-oh, the university professor here is very disappointed.
Yes, I know. So she copied stuff from other people into her book. I mean, it's one of those books that politicians write. It's not like a dissertation or anything like that. But still, you know, that it paints a weird picture. It's like, why didn't you do that right? What's
yet another German politician I can raise in my classes and citing correctly.
It's a long
after
list
after
what's
his name, Zur Gutenberg, and then
right, and Giffey.
Oh, and the Ministry of Education wasn't the Minister of Education. Didn't she plagiarize too?
Oh, the couple of years ago. The minister of the family minister, yeah, Giffey. She did that, and well, there are lots that have this problem.
What's interesting is I think if American politicians plagiarize people, and even say Biden famously plagiarized speeches from Neil Kinnock, this is 30 years ago. I just don't think Americans take it as seriously as the Germans do, that they would lose their positions over it.
Yeah, I think...
As Zur Gutenberg did. The defense minister, maybe a decade ago, lost his job because of this.
I think the public outrage here is pretty big about these cases, and I think it has to do with the fact that people somehow think, okay, if you're not honest when you're writing your dissertation or book or whatever it is, maybe you're just not an honest person, you know? Like the fact itself, I think, is not such a big deal, but then what does that tell me about you? And people are like, can I trust you if you don't even quote people right in your dissertation, right? I think that's how it always ends up bringing people down.
Interesting.
And yeah, so the Greens, as I mentioned, are currently the smallest faction in parliament. And this is the first time they have a really, really big campaign. This is the first time they have a chancellor candidate. They had not done that before. And it's I think they're struggling a bit just with the size of this task, right? It's a lot of money. It's a lot of strategy. It's a lot of how do we time it right? Which posters and slogans do we use when? All this stuff. And the other parties are just more versed in that because they have been doing it for a long time. Like they always had the chancellor candidate. They always had more money, more people, and just more resources to do that. And for the Greens, it's the first time. And so they make mistakes, you know.
It's election infrastructure, which obviously this is why it would be almost impossible for an American third party to do much, because of that huge infrastructure that the established parties have. They have the consultants, they have the people, they have the experience, all of that.
So so now the Greens are in third place in the polls, like in the one you mentioned up front from today, the new one. And it looks like they're not going to make it to number one, at least. Maybe they can secure the number two spot, but number one is, I think, pretty much out of reach right now.
So a last point on the Greens before we move on. The poster that I saw that puzzled me, and this was in Berlin, was that the Greens are against child poverty. And I thought, what a bizarre thing to put on an election poster.
Yeah.
Surely even like the worst party in history could use that as
for
a slogan.
Sure. Yeah.
Who's for? And this might be an example of what you were saying of maybe people who are spending money on a slogan that's just not effective, I believe.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's another example of there are a lot of those where you're just like, yeah, sure, but where does it go beyond that, right? How do you actually want to do it? What are you planning to do to fight child poverty? Poverty, but nobody's going to walk by and be like, I love child poverty. What are you talking about? So it's another one of those. Yeah. they have better ones too. I just want to say
some,
that.
I know. Well,
still,
I have to choose one.
A
prankster, some prankster in Berlin put up an extremely hysterical poster right above, I could say, SPD poster. It said, I promise that I'll tell you everything you want to hear before the election. I promise. It was really good.
That's very on point. Yeah, very good.
It's near Checkpoint Charlie if you cycle by there.
Oh, yeah, I have to check that out.
Okay, so now we're going to move to the second. And the reason why we're actually going carefully through these parties, just to remind the listeners, is it will likely be a three-party coalition. So one of these final three parties, well, we'll talk about the AfD, probably will not be in it, but one of these final three parties might be the winning percentage that gets, say, a coalition into power.
That's right.
So these are the FDP, the AfD, and the left. So let's start with the FDP, which I said was on actually 12% as of this morning.
Yeah. So that's the FDP is a liberal party. They are pro-business, anti-tax, and
liberal in the economic sense, not in any American sense.
They are very progressive in terms of societal and social things, but yeah, they're liberal in the economic sense. They're always talking about lowering taxes, which does remind me of the Republican Party a little bit.
And eliminating government regulations.
Yes, so that's two big topics for them. They're basically like, people need more freedom and more space to do what they want. Everybody has good ideas and big potential. Just leave them alone, right? And they can do a lot of stuff actually on their own. They were in a government with Merkel a while ago, so before the so-called Grand Coalition with the SPD. Yeah, they are doing pretty well in the polls, so better than in the last election. In the last election, they got 10.7%, so now they're polling at like 11, 12%. That's pretty good. And there are two ways, if we want to start mentioning coalition options a little bit, that they could end up in government. So they could be in the so-called traffic light coalition. German coalitions have silly names. That would be the SPD because their color is red, and then the FDP whose color is yellow, and then the Greens whose color is obviously green. The other option is the so-called Jamaica coalition. So that is also FDP and Greens, but with the CDU whose color is black as the leading party, right? So yeah, they are important in the election because they could be the ones that decide on which of the big parties is actually gonna be leading the government.
Right, and the poster that I want to share, tell me what you think about this, because this is one party that I think is really not setting itself against climate change per se, but they are trying to identify that there's a different approach than the ones that the Greens and the CDU and the SPD are pursuing. And this poster said, zu Fuß mit dem Rad, mit dem Auto, per Bus, entscheide selbst. So that means on foot, on your bike, with your car, or on the bus, you get to decide yourself, which shows a couple of things. One, that the FDP is the party of libertarian or liberal free choice in society. People should be allowed to make their own decisions about how they want to transport themselves. And this is really directly against green initiatives.
Yeah. So you painted a very accurate picture there. They spend a lot of time also in their election program saying what they don't want. So, for example, they don't want a speed limit on the Autobahn. They don't want to make fuel emission cars illegal by a certain time. You know, they're like, so what we want to do with climate change, basically, they say we want to have a cap on CO2, and then the economy has, the companies, everybody has to figure out how we get there, right? That's basically
the free market
yes,
solves
yeah innovation is going to get us out of the mess, basically. Possible, but I don't know.
Could there be problems with the, given that they have a pretty different stance on climate change, would there be problems with the potential coalition with the Greens?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So one big problem will be, how do we address climate change? How much government set rules do we want, and how much do we just want the market to sort it out itself? Another big thing is the tax issue, because as I said, they want to lower taxes, and the SPD and the Greens want to raise taxes on the really wealthy, and partly in order to finance investment into fighting climate change, right? Things like that. So that's going to be a big issue there. On the other hand, if they were to go into this Jamaica coalition with the CDU, they have very different approaches on things like family and marriage and all that kind of stuff. Like, the CDU is very conservative on that side of things, and the FDP way more libertarian about it. So that is going to be a fighting point for that kind of coalition.
Okay, and let's now go to the next party, the AFD, which, if we believe what everyone says, will never be part of a coalition, but they are worth mentioning here because they're polling today at 11%.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know about the AFD, Christina, can you just tell us a little bit about the AFD?
Well, they're the right-wing populist party. They came into the public eye and gained support during the time when a lot of refugees came to Germany, which Merkel famously enabled, I'm gonna just say. And during this refugee crisis, where Merkel was like, okay, we're gonna open our arms to all these people in need, that's when the AFD became more important and gained more support. Before that, they were mainly an anti-Euro party. Like, they wanted to go back to the Deutsche Mark, right? And then they sort of became the more of an anti-refugee, anti-migration party. So all the other parties say that they will not form a coalition with them. And the AFD themselves actually don't really want to be part of the federal government. They want to be in the opposition. That's because that's their thing, right? They're against everything that the so-called old parties, that's what they call them, are doing. So they're not going to be in government, as you said. But yeah, they're still important because they show, I mean, 11% in the polls isn't nothing, right? They show that there is a certain number of people in the country that agree with their stance. And yeah, that's, I think that's worrying because, as I said, they're anti-migration, anti-refugees. Their politics is misogynistic. Some people have been showing anti-Semitic views, outright racist views. And yeah, if by doing that you get more than 10% of the country to support you, that's an issue.
Right. And another thing they are against is any strict climate change policies.
Yeah, they say that climate change is not man-made. There you go. Then you don't have to do anything about it, right?
So the election poster I want to share with everyone about the AFD works a lot better in German, but you'll get the point. It is "Kann ich noch nach Kreta, Kreta?" So that means, can I still go to the Greek island of Crete, Greta? And by which, well, the poster is referring to Greta Thunberg, the teenage climate activists who started the Fridays for Future
right.
thing. So here, this is, I think, you know, classic oppositional politics,
yes.
Really for that 10% of people who don't want their lives disrupted by some teenage girl who's saying, you can't drive your car anymore, you can't fly away on holidays to sunny climates, you can't do any of this. Obviously, it's a little bit misogynistic too.
Right.
But this is like right in the AFD wheelhouse of effective oppositional messaging.
Yeah, for sure. There's the slogan that they use in their election program is Deutschland aber normal. So that means Germany but normal. And they put that on posters in different cities too. So for example, here in Berlin, it says Berlin, but normal. And I don't think any Berliner wants their city just to be normal, right? I don't think that's a very effective slogan. But yeah, so they're trying to paint this picture of like, these weirdos are trying to interfere with our traditional way of life, just the way we've always done things, and that's bad, and we don't want that, and we want to protect you voters from those crazy people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the last party then is the Left Party.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Left Party and how they might be significant in this election?
Yeah, so the Left Party, they're called Die Linke in German, which just means the left. They are just that. They're on the most left part of the spectrum among the bigger parties, among the significant parties. They want to raise taxes for wealthy people a lot. They want not only to tax their income, but also the wealth they already have. They want to talk about at least to deprivatize certain parts of the infrastructure, like, for example, hospitals should be state-owned or other things like that. They want to raise the money that the unemployed people get. So yeah, fighting poverty is a big thing for that. They want to raise also the money that poor pensioners get, all those things like classic leftist positions.
Which are also the same things that we actually see. Some of those are the same slogans we see in the CDU posters,
right,
and the SPD posters. So that, again, it's interesting that, you know, you have to get to really inside the left's political platform to find the stuff like we're going to privatize hospitals and have something like the NHS.
Right.
But there's another interesting issue, and I want to just comment this. Their poster is that they want to, it's Waffenexporte stoppen, mm-hmm. so to eliminate, and this is everywhere. I saw it in Berlin, I saw it in Hamburg. This is their national message. I remember years ago seeing it around Ramstein Air Force Base.
Yeah.
They want to eliminate weapons exports.
Yes.
Germany, I think, I'd have to check again, is probably number 3 or 4 in the world in exporting weapons.
Yeah. So they consider themselves as staunch pacifists, right? So that's part of that platform. So yeah, they don't want to allow any arms sales to anyone anymore. And they also don't want to send the German army to fight abroad anymore. Like right now, as people might know, like German soldiers are involved in EU and UN missions in different countries. We were in Afghanistan until recently with the other NATO members. They're, for example, in Mali and in a lot of places. And so the Linke want to put an end to that too. They also want to spend less on defense in general. That makes them different from all the other parties, like even the Greens, who have a pacifist heritage, I'm going to say, are saying, yeah, if the mandate is good, we can send German soldiers abroad. Like if the issue that they are supposed to be fighting about is legitimate, we can still do that. And so that's one point that makes the Linke different from all the other big parties. But what's maybe even more important, especially in this campaign, is that their approach to foreign policy is much different. So they have called to make away with NATO, to dismantle this whole organization, right? Because they say NATO is a military organization that has done a lot of bad in the world, and we just want to get rid of that. They have very close ties to Russia. Not everybody, right? It's a pretty diverse party, obviously, but some people have very, very close ties to Russia and are being pretty apologetic about what Vladimir Putin has been doing and things like that, right? And that makes it difficult for anyone to consider a coalition with them.
Even though 6% could be enough.
Yes.
I mean, if they get 6% of the vote, that could put two parties on the brink, and then potentially they could work with the left.
Right.
And this came up in the debate last night. So on the 12th, there was this question was directly asked of Laschet, Scholz, and Baerbock if they would ever join a coalition with the left, Die Linke.
Yeah, so the CDU, Laschet, they're completely against it. They've always said that, like, we are not going to form a coalition with this party. But the SPD and the Greens, they say we'll talk to them and then we'll see. Because I guess the idea is, yes, they are saying all these things about, like, we have to get rid of NATO and stuff like that. But what are they actually going to do if they have the chance to get into the government, if they have these coalition talks? Will they want to push through on that, or are they going to say, well, maybe we're just going to say we want reforms in NATO, you know, which is something that a lot of people are calling for, or, you know, if same with the German soldiers abroad, right? They could say, well, only if, you know, the mandate is such and such, that, so, you know, they could be more flexible than it looks right now. But it's definitely going to be a difficult negotiation process if the SPD and the Greens talk to them about it.
All right. So we've covered the parties and the candidates now. And we talked also a little bit about coalition possibilities, the various colored coalitions. But I just kind of want to take a broader step back now and just focus again on what you would say is the top three topics are that are motivating voters to vote for a specific person. And I think this is a hugely important point, because I took a very informal, anecdotal poll of various friends and acquaintances of mine.
Right.
19 out of 20 of them have not made a decision yet about who to vote for. 19 out of 20.
That's crazy.
Right. What do you think about that? Is that something that you're hearing also, or?
Well, the block of the undecideds is pretty big. I think that's something they poll on too. And I think in the latest polls, it was somewhere between 15 or 20%. But that is the same, pretty much the same as 4 years ago in the last federal election. So that's kind of normal. But yeah, so the big topics in this campaign, one of them is for sure climate change. I mean, it's been a topic for a while now, and then it was really fueled by a few things that happened in the past few months. There were the floods in Western Germany, where experts say that has been made possible, or at least more likely, by climate change, right? And a lot of people died in that, like close to 200 people died in that. There was this IPCC report that said it's all worse than we thought and we need to act now. And even if we act now, a lot of really bad stuff is still going to happen environmentally, because it's already come so far along, right? And then there was also a ruling by Germany's highest court that basically said, well, the government has a duty to act on climate change because they have a responsibility for the younger generation, right? They can't just leave it all up to them. They have to factor that into their decisions. So yeah, climate change is definitely one of the main issues in this campaign.
But it seems to me that the top three parties, again, and Merkel was instrumental in accepting climate change, and the CDU.
For sure.
The SPD, with its left-leaning ways, is a climate change party, and the Greens, too. So which party stands to benefit the most? This is a sick thing to say, of course, from like the floods.
Right. Well, it's difficult to say, because people react differently to that kind of event, right? So, I mean, the Greens are definitely the ones that go furthest in the way that they want to change politics to react to climate change, right? So, for example, right now, Germany is set to stop using coal as an energy source in 2038. That was a long process with a big commission that worked on that for a long time. And then they made this plan, and it was made into law. that it's going to be over by 2038. So the Greens want to do that by 2030, which isn't as far away as it sounds. It's only 9 years, right? They want to stop the fuel emission cars, like only electric cars are supposed to get newly onto the streets, I think also by 2030. They want to push the goal to make Germany so-called climate neutral by several years. And yeah, they're very ambitious. Yeah, I think on the one hand, there are going to be a lot of people who like that because they think this is a very, very urgent issue that we need to address. But there are also people who are going to be like, well, yes, I know climate change is a problem, but isn't all this stuff that they're suggesting going too far? And is it maybe going to cost me personally too much? But yeah, they are the party that are putting this issue front and center. It's like their DNA, basically, as a party.
You mentioned that there's this worry that people don't want the changes to cost them too much. Right. So let's use that to link to another issue that you've mentioned quite a bit as influencing voters and voting behavior, and that's taxes.
Yeah, so I mean, taxes, I think, comes up in pretty much every election campaign around the world, right? Because people always want to know, am I going to have more money after this or less, right? It sometimes just comes down to something that simple. The conservatives, the CDU, they say they don't want to raise taxes. They actually, in certain points, want to lower taxes for people that are fairly wealthy, make quite a good amount of money. One of the arguments they use for that is that they want to help the economy because actually a lot of companies pay income tax, because if it's a smaller company and I'm the owner, I'm running this thing, then I am paying income tax on what my company is doing, right? So it's an economical matter for them. And like I said, the SPD and the Greens want to raise taxes on the wealthy and the very wealthy. They want to lower taxes for people who make less money. And they want this money to get to the government so that investments can be made, for example, for certain things that have to do with climate change.
And the one topic, which is strange because it seems to come up so much that we really haven't discussed yet, is the coronavirus. How is that affecting?
Oh, yeah, that's still there. You're right.
How about a quick update on how corona is affecting the process? And if anyone's taking any political hits, well, namely the SPD and CDU, I still firmly believe that Trump lost the U.S. election because of the coronavirus. I think he definitely would have won without the pandemic happening, because the U.S. was in such a strong economic position and
That's
people
true.
Were wealthier.
Right. I think the difference here is that pretty much people from all parties have made mistakes or can be blamed for certain parts of the pandemic management going wrong, right? The federal minister for health is a CDU guy, but then the federal ministry, for example, for the family is held by the SPD. And there's a lot of debate about why are schools and childcare centers not made safer? Why, for example, do we not have a vaccine mandate for people who work there? Things like that. So I think there's just a lot of blame to go around. There is no one party or one person that sticks out as it was therefore they really did a very bad job. It's a lot of people that didn't manage this very well. For example, with the school question in Germany, schools is a state matter. There are Länder that are led by the CDU or by the SPD or by the Greens or even by the Left Party. And nobody did a great job there. So everyone shares the blame.
You did mention in a previous email to me that one effect of corona on the system of voting itself was voting by mail. How do you think this is going to affect turnout, and will it benefit one party more than another, do you think?
Well, it's definitely going to make a big difference in terms of when people make their decision to vote, because you can already vote by mail right now. And I think it's been about maybe 2 to 3 weeks that you could order the stuff that you need to vote by mail and could already be done with that. So all the efforts that the parties are making now to change people's minds is not reaching as many people as it could, because a lot of those letters are already mailed, right? Vote by mail in Germany is something that everyone can do. You just have to request the paperwork. That's all. You don't have to give a reason or anything. And it's been becoming more and more popular, like every time, like in every federal election, the number of people who vote by mail is getting bigger. And what they think this year is that it could be more than half of people, wow, right? So far, I think it's been somewhere between a fifth and a fourth of the votes that were mailed in, and now it could be more than half. That would obviously be a record. And one, or the main reason for this big jump, is that people don't want to get coronavirus from going to their voting place, right? Yeah, so that is a big issue. And interestingly, some people or some parties are putting like little extra stickers on their posters that say, vote by mail now. For example, mm-hmm. The SPD does this, or the Greens, where they're like, just get it out of the way now. Vote for us. Do it by mail. You're done. The only party who is anti-vote by mail is the AfD, so the right-wing party. They are bringing up pretty much the same arguments that Republicans have brought up in the US during the last election process, where they're saying it's not safe, it is prone to manipulation, we don't really know what's happening, who is actually, you know, inking out that the paperwork in somebody's home and things like that. And yeah, the Federal Election Commission is spending a lot of time reassuring people that it is actually a safe way to vote.
And does higher voter turnout or voting by mail benefit a party, do you think, or is there no evidence for that?
I don't really know of any studies about that. I'm sure there are some. I'm going to say that usually higher voter turnout benefits parties that are left of the middle, because usually people who vote conservative are more likely to go to the polls than people who vote more kind of left of center. Yeah, the fact that a lot of people are voting by mail is probably gonna also make turnout be higher than usual. So in the end, we could have a higher turnout in general because more people voted by mail.
Okay, so we have covered all of the parties, candidates, and issues, and we haven't even begun to discuss Angela Merkel's legacy, but yeah. Unfortunately, I think we need to keep that as a question mark, and maybe we'll do a show in the future on Merkel's legacy. I'd love to have you back, because you do a great job explaining all of the complexity about German politics. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, so Merkel, 16 years, crazy, right?
Yeah, totally crazy. Anyway, that deserves its own discussion.
Sure.
Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot. I love putting journalists on the spot. Mm-hmm. It's what you do best. However, putting you on the spot would be asking you who you think would win. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to ask, will anyone be storming the Reichstag after the election?
I doubt it. I mean, there are certain scenarios where that I think would cause bigger demonstrations. For example, say the SPD comes out in number one, but the CDU ends up forming a coalition with the FDP and the Green Party, the so-called Jamaica coalition. And so Laschet somehow becomes chancellor, even though his party didn't get the most votes. That is possible. I think that would really rally people on the left to take to the streets and to demonstrate. But yes, storming the Reichstag, no, I don't think that's going to happen. That's something that the right-wing people do, and I don't think that they're going to go and demonstrate, even if Scholz is going to be chancellor, right?
Okay, well, I'll hold you to that prediction, and we have All you right. on tape if you're wrong. Christina Neuhaus, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for all of your insight.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Goodbye.
Just so you know, once again, the views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the guests or the host, not the AmerikaZentrum, which does not take any institutional positions on politics or policy. Thanks again for listening.